the customs and practices of the Battle Creek School go forth to all the churches, and the pulse heart beats of that school are felt through the body of believers. We must therefore conclude that all the churches and believers were more or less under the influence of Battle Creek College at this time. At least a large percent of Seventh-day Adventists would have treated the heavenly visitant, had he come to them suggesting reforms, as the Battle Creek College teachers and students treated him. Perhaps then we can understand why God says, "The plan of the schools we shall establish in the closing years of the work is to be an entirely different order from those we have established. I have been shown that in our educational work, we are not to follow the methods that have been adopted in our older established schools. There is among us too much clinging to old customs, and because of this, we are far behind where we should be in the development of the third angel's message." I'm reading from Christian Education by Sutherland, page 134 and 135. You notice he points out here that the Adventist teachers rejected Christ when he would have rejected Christ if he would have come to them, if he would have come trying to do educational reform. How have we seen that come true as we've studied the light of 1882 on education as it has been changed since 1948? How have we seen the reception of Brother Bell in 1882? Was he well received? No. How have we seen the brethren who have treated the 1882 writings in their changes and deletions to exonerate McLaren and Uriah Smith and have us even forget or not even be aware or know who Brother Bell is? Don't we see in their in these courses of action the very same characteristics that Sutherland is writing about here? That if God or reformers would come to the schools trying to do educational reform, they would be rejected. They reject the counsel from God. Sutherland, page 135. The founders of Battle Creek College made their mistake when they did not follow the plan given them by the Lord, but modeled the school after worldly schools about them. In these last days, your test, and he says this to me and you, doesn't he? Here's a founder of the Adventist school systems. In these last days, your test will come. You are not to pattern your schools after the older established Seventh-day Adventist schools, but are to follow the divine model. If we fail to understand this divine plan, we shall have no place in the loud cry. Reform is called for. The teachers of Battle Creek at the time received this word from Special Testimonies on Education, page 28 and 29. They rejected the counsels on reform, and they received this word from the Lord. Special Testimonies on Education, 28 and 29. Quote, "A succession of showers from the living waters has come to you at Battle Creek. Each shower was a consecrated inflowing of divine influence, but you did not recognize it as such. Instead of drinking copiously of the streams of salvation, so freely offered through the influence of the Holy Spirit, you turned to common sewers and tried to satisfy your soul thirst with the polluted waters of human science." What does it say in Early Writings, page 35? They drink of the deep waters and foul the residue with their feet. This is the characteristic of the Seventh-day Adventist Church if it's going to be found wanting, remember? Is anything new? Do you see the repetition of the apostasy coming over and over in the history of Christianity, let alone the Adventist movement? The Lord said to them, "Instead of drinking copiously of the streams of salvation so freely offered through the influence of the Holy Spirit, you turned to common sewers and tried to satisfy your soul thirst with the polluted waters of human science. The result has been parched hearts in the school and in the church." Notice how the school has an effect upon the church. If the church is Christless, by definition, Laodicean, then work it backwards. What does that say about the schools? Christless. Because the church wouldn't be Christless if it wasn't for the schools. It starts in the schools. But I hope the teachers, continuing on with the quote by Testimony of Jesus, Special Testimonies on Education, page 28 and 29, by Ellen White. But I hope the teachers have not yet passed the line where they are given over to hardness of heart and blindness of mind. If they are again visited by the Holy Spirit, I hope they will not call righteousness sin and sin righteousness. Now what happens when you do that? Testimonies to Ministers, page 16. This is a definition of the synagogue of Satan, brothers and sisters. When we look at righteousness and call it sin, and we look at sin and call it righteousness, that's a definition of the synagogue of Satan. Laodicea is papist. It is the synagogue of Satan, but it is not Babylon. Its judgment is going to be worse than Babylon. That's why it's not Babylon. It has great light that Babylon does not have and has rejected it. That's why it's not Babylon. Let's go on. There is a need of heart conversions among the teachers, Jesus says in testimony here. A genuine change of thoughts and methods of teaching is required to place them where they will have a personal relation to a living Savior. God will come near to the students because they are misled by the educators in whom they put confidence, end quote. Sutherland, Christian Education, page 136. The instruction which came to Battle Creek College for years shows that during all those years, the institution was unsettled on many of the important principles of Christian education. She was born with false ideas of education in her constitution, and she did not realize the source of her weakness. She was drinking from streams polluted more or less with worldly wisdom, but she did not know her danger. She was an educational germ carrier and failed to realize that also. The straight testimonies sent to the institution must convince any believer in the testimonies that Battle Creek College was in great need of educational reform. Battle Creek College made radical reforms according to the majority of people. They would be radical, that is, not according to Christ. Not long after these words were sent, it dropped the regular degree courses, and at the same time enriched the curriculum with a number of subjects very practical for the Seventh-day Adventist missionary, and liberty in the choice of studies was regarded as fundamental. Each student, with the aid of the teachers, selected those studies considered most essential to his life's work. The strength of the faculty was thrown heavily upon those subjects that had been neglected and for which God had been calling for years. And what were those? The practical subjects, right? When the school broke away from the stereotype courses and degrees, it found itself much more capable of following the instructions sent by the Lord. And the result was that in a short time, Battle Creek College was planted on a beautiful farm. It was given an opportunity to get an upright position. And then this most remarkable statement came from Ellen White in the General Conference Bulletin, 1901, page 454. Quote, "It is the beginning of the educational reform. No educational institution can place itself in opposition to the errors and corruptions of this degenerate age without receiving threats and insults, but time will place such an institution upon an elevated platform." End quote. Battle Creek College at one time followed the Lord and did away with degrees and what they lead to. Here's a copy of Madison, God's Beautiful Farm, the E.A. Sutherland story by Ira Gish and Harry Chrisman, published by Pacific Press. I want you to have a copy of it. If you'll notice in that document I'm giving you, page 69 and page 70 of this book, Madison, God's Beautiful Farm, the story of Sutherland. I want you to see here that there was a time when Battle Creek College followed the Lord in these councils and did away with the degrees and the courses that led to them. Some people seem to think when you stand up speaking against the papal system of education that it's something new to us. I want you to be able to show them by the weight of evidence that it's not new. That its very roots in speaking against papal education and the courses that lead to degrees are bound up in what makes Adventism God's chosen or God's called people. That we were called to oppose these papal systems. And the founders of our work realize this. It's nothing new. Page 69 of Madison, God's Beautiful Farm, then we'll come back to Christian education. And we're going to try to get done. I know it's long. I just hope you can see. A number of weeks ago when we hadn't approached education at all or the changes, and I said to you, there's a lot here. Do you see what I mean? There's no way you can present this in a half hour. There's no way. The crime is too great to unravel in a half hour. Madison, God's Beautiful Farm, on page 69, says this. The August Advocate of 1899, published at Battle Creek College, discussed the Catholic view of education and quoted from a Roman Catholic pamphlet, quote, "The conferring of degrees was originated by a pope," end quote. That's what Rome says itself. This challenge stirred the faculty into action. They forthwith announced the college, quote, "The college, under its new organization, ceases with this year to grant degrees. Preparation for usefulness in the cause of Christ will be the subject constantly held before the students, replacing the courses and diplomas of the past," end quote. On the same page with this announcement, two interesting statements appeared. President Sutherland read over the one, quote, "After 2 years of emphasis on practical education, on industrial training, this last graduating class to receive degrees has 19 members, one each in scientific, classical, Bible, and English departments, 8 in sacred music, and 7 in piano graduates, making a total of 19 students. The last class that graduated with degrees there was 19 students. Sutherland was reading it, and he was kind of pleased, you know, to see this. Now let's read. He let the paper fall to his lap. "Rather a poor showing for all our reform efforts," he said to his wife, Sally. Sally looked up at him with a bright smile. "It's a bit early to expect drastic results. God is working. Wait and see." Sutherland picked up his paper and read on, quote, "The first finishing class of the American Medical College held its Battle Creek closing exercises on the college campus Sunday afternoon, June 18th. The degree of MD will be granted in Chicago as the institution is incorporated under the laws of the state of Illinois." Do you think Sutherland realized that there was much more reform that needed to be done? In one paper that denounced degrees and said that they were going to only have 19 more graduate, in the same paper they bragged about the conferring of the doctor degree in medicine. Can you almost see Sutherland shaking his head, thinking, well, you've come one step out, why don't you take the next foot out? Why don't you walk completely free of this papal system? Now, I wanted you to have that so that you could see there was a time when Battle Creek College, when it followed the Lord, refused to grant degrees. Yes? Battle Creek College was in Berrien Springs, Michigan. It was known as Emmanuel Missionary College, and now it's known as Andrews University. That's different than Madison College, which is in Tennessee, Madison, Tennessee. Excuse me. Let's get back to Sutherland on page 137 of his book that we were reading. "This subject has been treated so fully because of the student's question, why We do not arrange studies in courses leading to degrees. You should know where you stand and why you stand there and should ask, am I following the plan instituted by Battle Creek College, which affected seriously every church in the denomination when it was not following Christ and it was following papist education, in other words? Or am I following that other plan of which the Lord said it is the beginning of educational reform? When Battle Creek College renounced its degree system, the Lord said, this is the beginning of educational reform. And in the very same year, what had it already been granting? Doctor's degrees in medicine. It took one step out and started taking the steps back in, even in the same year. With its very beginning of reform, it started to go back right into the papal system from which it was coming. And Sutherland worked hard for this reformation to come about. Now he's dead, and they make his house a museum. Now he writes a section on page 137 called Degrees and What They Lead To. Degrees have been indirectly referred to, for they are the reward of the traditional courses. I think there's some humor here. The way he says he indirectly referred to them, I think he pounced all over them myself. Were it not for the degree, it would be impossible to hold most students to a prescribed course. However, the most dangerous element in degree granting does not seem to be comprehended by those Christian educators who cling to the custom. Now listen very closely. This is probably the most important part of his whole book right here. A degree is a sign or seal of authority. In the Christian church, the conferring of degrees was originated by a pope as a sign of his authority over the educational system. Today, degrees are conferred by the state, and the state has no right to set its seal to the work of an institution unless it can approve the system of education offered by that school. The degree is a sign of its approval. Any Seventh-day Adventist school that grants degrees thereby invites state inspection and must accept the world standard and come into conformity to the worldly system of education. So, brothers and sisters, the papal system of granting degrees, by definition, is a union of church and state in education also. Continuing on with special studies in education, on page 138, claiming to conduct Christian schools, we yet seek to do so, claiming to conduct Christian schools, we yet seek to so teach that we can satisfy the worldly system. In time, this is all so important, in time the state will either demand absolute conformity to her system or refuse to grant the degrees. The same thing is true with all church-state unions. That's the problem with them. They become a snare. If we are building up our work in such a manner as to encourage students to seek degrees, there is a great danger that we will compromise on the true science of education in order to retain the state seal or mark. Seventh-day Adventists are not ignorant of the fact that even today, the papacy has the control practically of all education, and in a short time, this will be openly avowed. Then the inspection of our degree-granting schools will be done directly by the papacy. And a degree, if granted, will again come directly from that organization. It will be a seal or a mark of the beast. Other Protestants failed here. What shall we Seventh-day Adventists do? One educator has summed up the whole degree question as follows. From his first introduction into the school to the taking of his final degree, teachers, parents, and doting friends conspire in their efforts to stimulate the boy to get ahead of someone else. That in itself is not Christian, that's papist. The Christian, in a game of basketball, I'll illustrate this for you. The Christian, if he was playing, if he did, he wouldn't be playing the game. The Christian is not interested in winning himself so much as he is in letting the other person win. In helping the other person win. What can I do to help you get ahead? That's the Christian attitude. The papal system of degrees, And the competition that it leads to is the opposite of that system. From his first introduction into the school to the taking of his final degree, teachers, parents, and doting friends conspire in their efforts to stimulate the boy to get ahead of someone else. Men wear degrees as women wear fine bonnets, jewels in their hair, rings in their ears and on their fingers, and gay ribbons flaunting in the breeze. Consider, for example, the ornamental value of AM, MS, PhD, or the social value of such a tremendous decorative combination as that enjoyed by Mr. James Brown, AM, PhD, LLD, DD. Each one of these titles costs as much as a diamond of moderate size, or a large pearl, not the pearl of great price, and is worn for practically the same reason. It does not necessarily indicate anything. John Smith, tailor. James Brown, blacksmith. Mr. Jones, surveyor, are examples of titles which produce in the mind something more than the mere decorative effect. These indicate the trade or profession by which the man gains his livelihood. Because the degree simply puts the possessor in a position which distinguishes him from those who do not hold one and is not an indication of power to accomplish, worldly men are building up an educational aristocracy. What was it called in the times of Christ? The Sanhedrin. The educational aristocracy was called the Sanhedrin. They were the ones, incidentally, who did what to Christ? They killed him. You see how education is wrapped up in the rejection of Christ all through the history of Christianity? Let's go on. Because the degree simply puts the possessor in a position which distinguishes him from those who do not hold one and is not an indication of power to accomplish, worldly men are building up an educational aristocracy, feel that it is necessary to protect themselves by limiting the degree conferring power. They say there should be legislation regulating the granting of academic degrees. The following extract, says Sutherland, from a report signed by a number of presidents of leading universities appeared in the columns of Educational Review. Quote, the degree conferring power is not to be granted to any institution having requirements for admission and for graduation lower than the minimum standard established by the commission, or to any institution whose productive endowment is not equal to at least $100,000. The law is an admirable one and ought to be adopted by every state in the Union in order that wildcat education may go the way of wildcat banking, end quote. Do you see how these ones who establish themselves as an educational aristocracy try to limit the degree conferring power to maintain control? And then they say to all others who don't have the degrees that they're not authorized to teach or preach or even go so far as to say to gather in their homes to study with one another. That's the papacy. Page 139, Sutherland. You will be interested in the following statement contained in a letter written by Educational Secretary of the Seventh-day Adventist denomination in 1896 concerning an interview with Mrs. E.G. White on this subject. I explained to her the significance of the degrees and the meaning which was attached to them and the general course of study which was implied by them in the eyes of other educators, and her idea seemed to be that there is no need that we should pay attention to these things, that what we want to do is to educate for usefulness here and the eternal kingdom hereafter, and that the question with our people is not whether a young man has a degree, but whether he has a suitable preparation so that he can be a blessing to others in this work. I should want to feel perfectly free to arrange the work just as I thought would be best for the young people and for the work, without being bound by the idea that you must maintain a course of study so that you can constantly grant degrees. That's what Ellen White wrote back. That's what Prescott wrote back. Prescott was traveling with Ellen White, and Sutherland asked Prescott if he would ask Ellen White, should we have degrees or not? And Prescott wrote back those words. Do you see the unpublished testimonies that I gave you? I want you to have that. This authenticates Sutherland's book right here. This is what Sutherland's quoting from. He's quoting from Unpublished Testimonies, page 29 and 30. That's what he's quoting from. And I gave you a copy of that, where Sutherland wrote to Prescott. And notice who Prescott is. He's the Secretary of Education for the General Conference. Unpublished Testimonies manuscript I gave you, that's what we're looking at. You follow me on page 29 of that manuscript, where he writes, Sutherland writes to Prescott and says, "Dear brother, your letters of February 27th and March 20th both came by the last Vancouver mail and reached me last Thursday, just as I was closing up the work of our institute and preparing to go to Sydney to attend the sessions of the New South Wales Conference. I returned yesterday and took the first opportunity yesterday afternoon to have a talk with Sister White with reference to the matter of degrees, as you requested." And page 30 of Unpublished Testimonies, it says, "I am in great haste this morning as we are packing up to go to Sydney this afternoon. We sail for Africa on Friday, but I am anxious to give you a reply before leaving the country, as you wish the information in planning future work. Sister White says that she is not aware that she has ever written anything about the question of degrees, and in fact she seemed to know very little about their significance, and so she said she was quite sure that she had never written about them. She said, however, as she has said many times before, that our schools should give a better class of education than the schools of the world, but that it should be an entirely different character. I explained to her the significance of the degrees and the meaning which was attached to them and the general course of study which was implied by them in the eyes of other educators, and her idea seemed to be that there was no need that we should pay attention to those things, that what we wanted to do was to educate for usefulness here and to the kingdom, eternal kingdom hereafter, and that the question with our people was not whether a young man had a degree, but whether he had suitable preparation so that he could be a blessing to others in this work." Now you have evidence that authenticates the book that I just, the copy of the book that I just gave you. On Christian Education, page 140, back to Sutherland's book now. He says, "The object of our school should be to prepare students to carry the message of Christ's second coming to all the world and to prepare them speedily." And he quotes Ellen G. White, Special Testimonies on Education, page 120. "His work is not to wait while his servants go through such wonderfully elaborate preparations as our schools are planning to give," end quote. Let us hope that Seventh-day Adventists may save themselves from those pitfalls that caught the Protestant denominations before 1844. Question, have they saved themselves since Sutherland gave us this warning, and Ellen White and Jesus and all the others before them? No. Luther, Melanchthon, and all the rest before them? No. On page 141, he begins a section called Educational Principles. How far is this? It's so interesting. Oh, let's read it. You have it. He quotes Series B, number 11, page 30. Quote, "Before we carry the message of present truth in all its fullness to other countries, we must first break every yoke. We must come into the line of true education, walking in the wisdom of God, not in the wisdom of the world. God calls for messengers who will be true reformers. We must educate, to prepare a people who will understand the message and then give the message to the world." Series B, number 11, page 30. Then Sutherland continues on page 141. "The object of these studies has been to aid you students to understand the instruction in the paragraph just read, that you may avoid the educational pitfalls, and that you may come into the line of true education and have a part in carrying the message to the world. What I've tried to do here today for you, brothers and sisters, is to summarize a 152-page book for you so that you could get the meat of it. Now let's take a look at the main principles in his whole book, 20 principles. Number one, Protestants hold their church, their children in the church when they receive Christian education. They lose these children when they attend schools having a papal system. Melanchthon said, religion cannot be maintained without them. Question. Laodicean schools, are they papal? If we send our children to Laodicean schools, will we lose them? Is that a practice by life experience that you can think and see going on around you? Yes. Happens all the time. That's why. Yes, brother. We're losing them from the true church. Yes. We're losing them, period. They're just going out to the world. They go off to our colleges and they go. And they just keep right on going, don't they? Away from God. Well, that's because we violate the first principle right here. Second principle. The papal system of education is never a fit model for Protestant schools. Luther and Melanchthon recognized this. Accordingly, they reformed the school system, changing the curriculum, textbooks, and methods of teaching. When they died, it went back into the papal system. And the Protestants rejected the midnight cry. Some of the people that formed the Adventist Church came out of the Protestant debacle in the rejection of the Midnight Cry. And they started the Advent movement in 1844, basically self-taught, and by many they would be considered to be unlearned men. Okay? Now we've come around to the day where we're like the Protestants in rejecting the loud cry. Principle number three. Some schools, Christian in form, follow the papal system, sandwiching in a little Bible and flavoring the course with Protestant theology. John Stern did this. So have some schools since the days of Sturm. Is that the definition of Laodicean schools? They have the papal system and they sandwich in a little Bible. Yes. They're Christian in form only. Principle four. This combination educational system, Christian and papal mixed, and that's exactly what Laodiceans love. They love mixtures of truth plus error. Volume 2, Review and Herald, page 419 tells us that. This combination educational system, Christian and papal mixed, always opens the way for hair-splitting theological controversies, and the students are neglected for heresy hunting. It always terminates in a victory for papacy over Protestantism. 5. The papal system of education makes a Moloch out of abstract subjects and worships at his shrine. Its strength lies in repeating meaningless forms, and a dead study of words takes the place of a living knowledge of things. Mental cramming and formal memorizing are exalted methods of its teachers. You can read about that. We have already, education, page 230. Remember what memory does to you? Sutherland got it, didn't he? He got the same principle, didn't he? Mental cramming and formal memorizing are exalted methods of the papal system, Sutherland said. Education, the book Education, page 230, tells you the penalties for that mental cramming. Emulation, prizes, and rewards are needed stimulants for a mechanical and compulsory drill in unintelligible formulas, and their long stereotype courses end in degrees, the sign or the mark of the system. It is the subjugation of human minds to the authority of someone above, the stifling of free thought by unnatural close supervision in the place of self-government. It leads away from nature, nature's work, and nature's God, and centralizes in cities and man-made institutions. This is papal education, and its reward is the degree conferred at the end of the traditional course. Principle six. Every school is the pulse beat of some organization, of the state if it is a state school, of the papacy if a papal school, and of the Christian church if it is a Christian school. Any educational system which mechanically teaches a stereotype course leading to degrees will, in time, result in the development of a creed. What do we call it today? Statement of fundamental beliefs. That's what the definition of a creed is. Look it up in Webster's. You'll see that. And you'll see our own folly if you look in the historical foreword written by the Ellen White Estate in Testimonies to Ministers, Roman number 17 and Roman number 18. You'll see the folly of the creed. We don't have the creed, we have the definition of one. A creed is a statement of fundamental beliefs accepted as authoritative by the church, and that's what we have. Was Sutherland right? Yes. But do you see the deceiving nature of it? Oh, these things have become so covered up and deceptive in their practices. It's such an effort to get the way made straight again. Let's go on. A creed written or perhaps consisting only of the opinions of those in power, but a creed nevertheless is formed when we adopt any educational system that patterns itself after a stereotype course leading to degrees. Anyone who does not recognize a creed then and recognize its power to initiate is considered irregular or independent. Isn't that exactly what's going on today? I used to hear it all the time when I worked for the conference. If you don't teach the creed, if you don't teach a statement of fundamental beliefs, resign. That's because we have false education that method and that principle has come to us. Principle 7. Protestant education allows the student freedom in the choice of studies. This freedom from the stereotype course bears fruit in a church which provides for differences of opinion without the cry of heresy. Courses and degrees are an essential element in a religious trust. Trusts, in the very nature of things, can make no use of those who question their authority. Those who differ must be crushed. Principle 8. You see, but if you would put this whole story together, you'll see why you just cannot leave this out. You just can't and think that you know the story of education and its importance. Principle 8. There are but two systems of education, one inspired by the Word of God and one by other literature. The Christian school not only has Bible study in its curriculum, but Bible principles are the guide of the student's life, and the spirit of the Bible is not the inspiration of the school. If Bible principles are not the foundation of all subjects, and the basis of all teaching, that school, even though Christian in name, has imbibed papal principles. Oberlin, breaking from the papal system before 1844, restored the Bible to its place as a permanent textbook, and pagan and infidel authors were thrown out. When I was at seminary, they told me that the Bible was in the back seat. When I talked to them about pagan and infidel authors, I was literally told, the Bible is in the back seat here. You can study that later. 9. Any system of education that exalts the Bible will receive light on health reform, simplicity of dress, country life. Oberlin, preparing for the Midnight Cry of 1844, accepted light on these subjects. Students discarded the use of flesh foods, tobacco, condiments, tea, coffee, rich pastries, hot breads. They used graham flour, discarded sloppy foods, expensive dress, jewelry, accepted the country as God's home for man. These same reforms will be carried to a completion by those who are preparing for the loud cry. Because they didn't carry those reforms to completion is why the Protestants rejected the Midnight Cry. Because the Adventists are not carrying these reforms to completion is why they will reject the loud cry. Principle 10. Christian schools are content with simple, modest buildings and equipment, but must give great and mighty truth. Papal schools must have massive buildings and elaborate equipment, but are content with little or adulterated truth. Principle 11. Christian education is not content with only learning things in the mind. What is studied must be put into practice. Manual training is a part of every Christian school curriculum. The papal system is content to have its students learn and hold the knowledge without making any practical application. That's the truth. Principle 12. Christian training schools make provision for physical culture and healthful exercise by providing plenty of useful labor. Papal education makes little provision for manual training. Therefore, athletics, sports, games, and gymnasiums become the artificial substitutes for God's plan for physical exercise. Schools preparing students for the loud cry should complete the work they have started. 13. Christian schools have for one of their most important objects the training of students to be self-governing, to take their places not as dependent and devitalized members of the church, but as independent and original workers under the direction of God's Spirit, all cooperating in harmony with divine principles. The papal system makes no effort to train students to be self-governing, for such a training is fatal to the papal church organization. As a matter of fact, it's Satan's plan, in Four Spirit of Prophecy in the chapter Snares of Satan, to get men to bind themselves up to other men, isn't it? To get men to rely upon the judgment of others. If he can control the ministers, then he can control the people. And how has he done it? Through education. 14. Every Christian missionary should be a producer. In other words, he should be self-supporting. No great religious movement can be started or successfully carried forward that is not an army of lay members who are active, self-supporting missionaries. Christian schools have no greater object than to train such an army. Papal schools must avoid this, for it is destructive to their system of organization for controlling men. Number 15. Now let's finish 14. Christian schools before 1844 caught this idea of training missionaries for the midnight cry. Church leaders suppressed this reform. Christian schools before the loud cry will turn out an army of self-supporting workers. How true, how true. 15. The needy places of the world are calling for self-supporting missionaries. When the church opposed Oberlin's training missionaries, Oberlin was a college that was following educational reform. We didn't have time to cover the story of Oberlin in here, just for your information. When the church opposed Oberlin's training missionaries and refused to give them a place in the regular work, thousands of them went to the Indians, to the freedmen, to the mountain whites, and to foreign countries under the direction of the American Missionary Society, an organization created by self-supporting workers. 16. Oberlin teachers, in order to make their school a success, sacrificed heavily in the matter of wages. Her students were encouraged to go where God called, with little concern over the question of remuneration. Oberlin considered it her duty as well as her pleasure to assist students to find their life work. 17. Oberlin teachers shortened the time students spent in school and made their study practical by correlating classwork with the reforms they desired their students to accept. 18. Opposition to Oberlin, while she was in the line of true education, brought to her friends and their means and their attendance increased. How about that? When Oberlin was following the Lord and received opposition, it brought to them friends, means, and their attendance increased. That's the opposite of what the world teaches, isn't it? 19. Outside opposition is a serious matter to a Christian school. But so long as the school keeps the line of true education, the opposition will only strengthen the reform. But long-continued internal opposition is destructive. It was responsible for the downfall of the 16th century Reformation. It ruined the movement in 1844. Notice, if the school is in the true line of education, opposition will strengthen reform. If it's not, opposition is destructive, and rightfully so. If the Reformation is not, if the school is not in true education, it shouldn't be allowed to stand. 20, the last one. The spirit of a parent is necessary to the prosperity and continued success of educational reforms. Oberlin had this blessing to a marked degree. Consider the advantage of having one teacher strong as a reformer on a faculty for 50 years. Students, are you doing all you can to bring your school into the line of true education? Sutherland asked. Sutherland's book, page 147. Notice the importance he places upon the parent, necessary to the prosperity and continued success of educational reform. So we can't just blame the leaders, can we? The parents get what they want. They get what they ask for. In in closing, and I am closing, believe me, I'm going to close by just reading one quote from Ellen White. We talk more and more how educational systems and the degrees were a mark or a seal of the papacy, and that by getting these things, we opened ourselves up to getting the mark of the beast. Do you agree with that? Although Sutherland did not mention the quote, he said it in principle, and I want to close by mentioning the exact quote that over and over and over through his discussion of degrees he mentioned in principle. Volume 3, Review and Herald, page 481. It talks about how you get the mark of the beast. You want to know how you get it? You think educational system that Laodicea has is not going to get people the mark of the beast? Think again. Let me read it to you. Volume 3, Review and Herald, page 481. The mark of the beast is not gotten only by attending Sunday worship. It's not the only way we get it, as is commonly misunderstood today. You think you don't get the mark of the beast for the papal system / Laodicean system of education? Let me read. Review and Herald, 481, column 2. The third angel's message has been sent forth to the world, warning men against receiving the mark of the beast or of his image in their foreheads or in their hands. To receive this mark means to come to the same decision as the beast has done, and to advocate the same ideas in direct opposition to the Word of God, end quote. You got it? That's how you get the mark of the beast. And notice where it's given. It's given in our foreheads or in our hands. In our foreheads. Our minds. In our minds. Or in our heart, in our hands. Our works. It's in our thoughts or in our works. It's in what we say or what we do. And what we've been taught through education gives us the mark of the beast in the forehead. And why? Because if we don't stand up against the papal system of education, it means that we've come to the same decision as the beast has done in education. If we don't stand up against Laodicean papal systems of education, it means that we are advocating the same ideas in direct opposition to the Word of God on education. You will receive the mark of the beast for Laodicean education. You'll be led into Sunday worship. We've studied that. You see how it's all connected? And you see what the root problem is? If I was to ask, what is the problem that led the Jews to reject Jesus, that led the Protestants to reject the midnight cry, and that is leading the Seventh-day Adventist Church to reject the loud cry, what would you say? I hope you can have the evidence to show others these things, and I apologize that it's taken so long. It's like the difference between explaining one murder and the mass murder that we have had in the subject of education in this church. Unraveling the crime that's been committed is mind-boggling. I hope that when we get the tapes finalized, that you'll have time to sit down and listen to the whole thing with more freedom so that you can have the impact of it all at once. Let's kneel for prayer.